You're listening to the Light Novel Podcast. Visit us online at lightnovelpodcast.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Light Novel Podcast. Tonight, we are talking about the J Novel Club series, How a Realist Hero Rebuilt the Kingdom. Tonight, joining me, I have Bio Gundam.
I read the Prince.
Okay, and we've got John Luke.
I haven't read the Prince.
Boom!
And we've got Terrence.
What's up? I just read Realist Hero, but I did not read The Prince as well.
You know what, man? I was hoping you were going to go, I am the Prince. Oh. That would have killed it.
We can restart it.
No. No, it would have only, it only works if it's like totally unprepared. Okay, so we don't have a lot in the way of news for this episode, except one piece of news that, funny enough, just came in a couple hours before we started recording, and it's actually fairly big news. So Fujimi Shobo Fantasia Bunko imprint has announced that they are, after 18 years, releasing a 16th volume of Slayers.
Mm-hmm. It's like they brought the dead horse back to life.
Well, you know what? This seems to be kind of like a trend now, right? I mean, so Sorcerer's Stabber Orphan, of course, just recently licensed, and they just released the first volume from J Novel Club. That one, it's anniversary. It's getting like a brand new anime. It's getting a brand new manga. Like this whole revival of big titles from like the 90s, it seems to be a thing. Although this, like this is just like continuing the series. This isn't like a relaunch or remake or anything like that. So I kind of wonder if this means that Fantasia Bunko is going to re-release all of the earlier volumes of Slayers.
Well, probably.
I also wonder if they're going to use the same artist or if they're going to do all new art for these ones.
It would definitely be interesting. Like, I'm liking this whole thing of like 90s stuff coming back. It's like the real retro.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, light novels have actually been long enough out that they are now going back retro. Yeah,
it's always wins.
So apparently it's going to ship on October 20th of 2018. That ought to be interesting. I am very curious about how that will do. Actually, you know, when I count down the top 10 in Japan every week, I'll be watching for that to see if Slayers 16 hits that top 10. It better. I'd be really angry if it doesn't. This one, of course, did actually come out partly in English, Tokyo Pop, which we have talked about before, and I thought they would rest in peace, but they're starting to crawl out of the grave again and publishing manga, but anyway.
Zombie
they
manga.
Published 8 of the novels. Yeah.
It's like they've beaten the horse's skeleton and it's come back to life.
Seriously. So they have, anyway, Tokyo Pop published 8 volumes of the 15 volumes back in the early 2000s. So this is very interesting. Very interesting. I'm now kind of curious because I thought this would be a series that nobody would rescue, but if suddenly the Japanese are putting out new content, and if it proves to be a huge seller, all we'll need is like a remake of the manga, or sorry, the remake of the anime, and my idea that someone may rescue this license will grow exponentially. Sam from J Novel Club, are you listening? Are you listening? Sorcerer's Stabber Orphan's a good start, but come on. There's so many good titles that need to be rescued. Anyway, moving on. So that's really all we're going to talk about news-wise. It's a little slow, probably will be a little slow news-wise until Anime New York City, which is in at least a month and a half or so. And even then, there probably won't be a lot that comes out of that. There's always a drought like over the winter nothing picks up really major again until the spring or around March or so when the conventions start up again. So anyway, so moving on to our actual topic for the night, and maybe it's a good thing there's not a lot of news, because I think we'll be talking about this one for a while. And that is the light novel series, How a Realist Hero Rebuilt the Kingdom. This one is released in English by J Novel Club. They have released 6 volumes to date. The 7th volume is coming out in September. And at that point, they'll be caught up to the Japanese releases. The story is about a modern Japanese man named Soma, who is summoned to another world. He is summoned as a hero. Basically, in this world, a demon kingdom has erupted in the northern part of the world, and the major player country that is holding the demon hordes back basically has said to all the countries, either send us money or perform your hero summoning and send us heroes to help fight the demons. And so this poor kingdom that's in the middle of like a food crisis amongst all sorts of other problems summons a hero because they ain't got no money to send. And upon meeting the hero, King Albert, the king of this kingdom, says, you know what? You'd be a way better king than I am. Here you go. You're now the king. And so Soma, in order to prevent himself from being sent to the front lines of fighting a demon army, especially when he really doesn't have any spectacular powers, decides to apply all sorts of modern knowledge, both social and infrastructure-wise, and rebuild the kingdom and allow it so that it can have enough riches to send instead of himself. And this evening we're going to be talking about volumes 1-4 of the series, because that's the first arc, which is really focusing on the whole rebuilding effort of Soma. And then I guess after the 4th volume, it kind of gets into more expanding the kingdom's influence and power. So now one of the major things that gets referenced all the time in this book is Machiavelli's The Prince, which Bio, of course, has mentioned already that he read. And so he is going to be our guide a little bit on the whole Machiavelli side of things. But otherwise, we'll just be talking about this series. And so, Bio, do you really want to start with Machiavelli right away? Or do you want to talk about some other stuff first and then work your way into it?
We should get out of the way first.
All right. Okay, let's get Machiavelli out of the way first. So, anyway, the prince... Soma basically is, he's like a humanities student going into college.
He's like a civil engineer and he studied politics and he's read history books. Like, I think his major is civil engineering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that the whole idea is that this is that most of what he is applying is based on his knowledge of history, culture, and, you know, studying on infrastructure and how to build and all that kind of stuff. So he's applying sort of modern ideas to this fantastical kingdom. And one of the items that, as I said, he references numerous times is Machiavelli's The Prince. So, Bio, give us a quick rundown. What is The Prince?
Well, now when you hear the word Machiavelli or Machiavellism, there's a lot of negative connotations to it, you know. And a lot of people, basically what the prince is that Machiavelli, he was a minister for one of the republics of Italy or something like that. He got ousted, and basically the prince is him trying to find work. It's basically advice. It's an advice book. And a lot of people think that, you know, Machiavelli's The Prince is a book for, you know, it's a mouthpiece for tyrants and dictators and, you know, gangsters and stuff like that. But, you know, I'm going to put an end to that misconception right away. Like, for one, Machiavelli was a humanist. He was a Republican. And in fact, in one of his other works, The Discourses of Ivy, he circle jerks about the Roman Republic for God knows how many pages. Machiavelli is more about political realism and being pragmatic than, say, espousing to the morals that were the the norm during his day. Like, for example, in most media, it's always the bad king must be kicked out of power and the good king must stay in power. But the problem is that these series don't take into account that, you know, the lawful good king isn't always the lawful nice king. Like, because even if, say, for example, you are a brave, just, abstaining, noble king, and etc., if you want to stay in power, you may have to do things that you may not want to. You may have to do underhanded things. You may have to do things that are ruthless and cruel. But, you know, and just to go back to the D&D analogy, you know, a lawful good does not mean lawful nice. And some of the things that Machiavelli advocates for, which is showcased in Realist Hero, is, you know, being cruel with intent. And what he means is by being cruel and ruthless with purpose and not just doing it for sadism and the lols. And in some of his other books, he even mentions some emperors or some people in power who have done acts so horrendous that you can't even justify it, you know, doing it for the lols or for sadism's sake. So it's essentially being cruel, deceitful, with a purpose in mind. It's not just doing it for the sake of doing it for the lols.
Right. Well, and I think that is definitely something that you see Soma showing in a great deal throughout these first four volumes of Realist Hero. Like, you bring up a good point, because we have sort of two kings that we can compare. We have King Albert, who was the ruler of this nation, Alfriedin, before Soma came along, and then we have Soma, who is now the king afterwards. And as you were saying, obviously King Albert, everybody saw him as this nice guy, he was kind and everything else, but he was largely ineffective. And it drove the country to the brink of destruction. And then you have Soma, who is not a nice guy, but he is just. And he does not do anything without having a purpose behind it, even if that thing is, on the surface, appears to be ruthless or cruel or calculating.
And I'll definitely go into some of the stuff that he does later on when we, like, bring it up. But basically what Machiavelli espouses is basically, you know, be realistic and be pragmatic. Like, just because someone says they're loyal to you doesn't mean that they actually mean it. Like, you have to, you know, think ahead, you know, be wise. Because one of the things that he also espouses is you could be courageous like a lion, or be cunning like a fox, or be wise like an owl, you know, stuff like that.
So let's get into, we probably should have talked about how we were going to structure this, because there's so many things that go on in the series, but we'll start with the first volume, because I just finished reviewing volumes 3 and 4, and it's very obvious that each of the volumes serves a very specific purpose. Volume number 1 is very much about infrastructure and strengthening the interior of the kingdom of Alfriedin. In volume 2, it's dealing with the civil unrest that some of those changes have caused, and then having to deal with invasion by another country that has seen that civil unrest as a weakness. Volume 3 is about basically that whole idea of negotiation, diplomacy between nations, because in volume 3, Soma is faced with the power of the empire and realizes, like, he's a pretty small kid on the block when it comes to them. And then volume 4 basically is the mop-up of everything. It's the solidifying power. It is the stabilization of everything going on in Alfriedin, and ultimately sort of setting things in motion that, if they pay off, could increase the power that Soma has and increase the kingdom's position going forward in its negotiations with the empire, and, you know, if potentially they have to come into conflict with the demon empire. So I think they all kind of have a very specific purpose to them all. So let's talk a little bit about volume number 1 in terms of the things that Soma's doing and everything in terms of the infrastructure that he introduces in that first volume.
Well, I think that one thing that we can maybe get on at first is how he's summoned, like how he reacts, like in a lot of other story, because like so far this kind of story is pretty much mainstream, like you see it everywhere, like someone summoned to fight a demon lord and everything, but like most of the time someone is summoned and, oh, you're going to fight the demon lord, okay, cool, what are my power, then let's go. Like, they treat it like a game. But this one, like, Soma, when he's summoned, like, he's in front of the king and he's kind of losing his cool, because it's kind of like, why am I the one that needs to help you to get rid of the demons? Like, I'm not a fighter. How should I... like, how should I solve your problem?
He's more of a thinker.
Yeah, like, Soma, he feels very reluctant at first to take, you know, those reins. And it feels like he almost, at the beginning, I don't know if the author had it planned out, you know, in terms of, I think he did to some extent, because he talks about at the very beginning, his grandfather wanted him to make a family. So I think he did have plans for him to sort of build the kingdom up as his family, and then, you know, obviously the harem element that comes in later. But at first, he seems almost reluctant to accept, I'm in this place forever. Like, I'm in this position, I accept it. It isn't until later that he starts to totally accept.
Yeah, and
I think it's because this responsibility is just being thrown upon him. Like, it's like, oh, by the way, you're a hero. You're the slay the demon lord, get bitches and etc. And he's like, whoa, 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 slow down. I'm not a fighter, I'm a thinker. So fighting is not my expertise. I mean, in later volumes, like, he gets physical training from one of the like captains of the guard or stuff, because he realizes that he's not physically strong and he needs to be physically, he needs to get stronger so he can protect himself, because he can't always rely on his bodyguards or his, like, you know, his, the dark elf waifu who is his bodyguard. Like, he can't always be relying on them as a crutch, you know. He realizes that, you know, I'm not a fighter. I'm gonna die. And I think it's real realistic. Like, if you were summoned to a fantasy world and told, like, oh, by the way, you have to go slay the demon king, I'd be like, no, fuck you. Why should I be involved in your mess?
Well, I think and that's the thing that immediately set this series apart from so many others. And you know, like Jean-Luc was saying, you know, there's so many isekais out there, and so many of them involve a hero almost immediately just going, okay, show me where the demon lord is, off we go, you know. And the funny thing about him is, yes, he resists, obviously, but even when he sort of discovers what magic power he does have, it seems to be a lot better used for administrative work than it does fighting demon lords.
Well, it could have been used in an offensive way, like later on when he's able to manipulate puppets. Like, he could have easily armed those puppets and went to war with it.
Well, I thought that too, but I kind of wondered to myself, I was like, how many can he split away? Like, could he potentially have an army of his own?
I think the problem with that is that he's basically splitting his consciousness into multiple parts, and if he does too many of it, it's gonna, like, confuse his brain, because basically it's like, oh, move this guy here, move this guy here, and he's basically gonna be, like, channeling, like, a shit ton of information, because he's controlling them, and also he has to be within a certain distance of them as well. So even if he does have an army, like, say for example his, like, puppet battalion is in the front lines, he has to be in the front lines as well. And if he's, like, focusing on his puppets, you know, what would happen if, say, a general or a soldier tried to attack him while he's concentrating? Because he has to keep his concentration up to use that power.
There is a limit, a distance for, like, a plain object. But animated object, there seems to be no limit. Like, he's, later on, he's in another country and he controls a robotic arm that writes stuff back at the castle.
Yeah, there definitely does seem to be sort of ways around his power. But and I mean, even though he says it's like splitting off his consciousness, he still seems to be be able to allow those things to act autonomously. Like, he talks about how he's going to sleep while his puppets or whatever are still signing documents, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not even like he has to, it doesn't seem like he has to be consciously aware of everything. But I think you're right, though, Bio. I think that there is that element of how much can you divide yourself, even if you're not, quote unquote, conscious of it, there's still a limit. Like, there has to be. And I mean, we haven't seen him do much more than, I think, five or six at a time. I'm just trying to think. But
yeah,
I...
it's similar to, like, the concept of stands, you know? Like, you can only control, like, one stand at a time. And if you're, like, you have to focus on multiple things at once, you know? And yeah. Another thing is that because Soma is a three-dimensional being, he can't just split his consciousness up like that. Like, if he was a four-dimensional being, then that would be fine, because bodies to him is just a way to interact with the third-dimensional plane. But because he's third-dimensional, he's still confined by those rules, because his main body is his regular body. Well, if he was a four-dimensional being, you know, bodies are just a way for him to interact, and he can make as many as he wants.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, it's an interesting power, but it's funny to watch how he puts it to use the most, which is to aid in the administration of the kingdom, or as we see, like, even in the first volume, when he uses it to control, like, the small mice to search for survivors after that earthquake or what have you in the forest or whatever. So, I mean, so first volume, I think, Jean-Luc, you point out a really good point about it. It already starts off with being unlike so many other isekais, because the hero kind of has a choice. Like, he's been summoned to fight the demon lord, but if he can find a way to fulfill the financial obligation to the empire, he doesn't have to go fight the demon lord. And right away, that sets a completely different tone for this series than so many other isekais.
Yeah, and also the reason why they were hesitant to give him up is because of the political situation, because Soma's their ace in the hole. Like, he is a hero, so they're a little hesitant to give him up, and because he's now established himself as king, they can't exactly now take him off the front lines, because, you know, his lieutenants and his retainers, they all fucking complain as well, like, say, hey, you can't take our king, he's needed here.
Well, I mean, that obviously that really comes into play later on, especially after they start seeing how effective his ideas are. But I think, like, right at the very start, I think you're right. There's an element of politics there about, you know, should we be giving this guy up to the Empire, or should we let it ride out for a bit? And we kind of, in Volume 4, which we'll get to, we do kind of find out why King Albert did what he did. But it just seems to me that right away this series sets itself apart by having this hero where they're like, okay, you've got two choices. Now, use your smarts if you've got them, if you don't want to go fight.
You were speaking about Volume 4. Won't get into it at the moment, but one thing that I want to point out, like, throughout Volume 1 through 4, like, you can see that the author planned ahead. Like, when Albert gave the crown to Soma, like, he states that everyone is surprised except the queen. The queen stays calm. Like, and it ends to Volume 4. Like, what happens there? Like, she knows. And since we are aware that she knows, it means that the author planned it way ahead.
Also, the thing of the queen is that the king, he married into the royal family. So he wouldn't be able to do this unless he got an okay from his missus, because essentially she's the one of the royal authority.
Yeah, well, yeah, she like ceded the throne to him, though, right? Like, yes, he was not the bloodline of the royal family, but essentially she granted him the power. Like, she said, he is the ruler, even though I have the bloodline. But you're right, though. Like, definitely you see that there is a definite power in that relationship. Like, it is not a relationship based on he's the king and she's subservient as the queen. There is an equality there, if not the queen seeming to have a little bit of an upper hand.
No, I think what the relationship is that, like, she thought that Albert was a better king, like a ruler than her. So she married him and just said, like, you have the royal authority, but just don't do anything, and like, don't do anything major without my permission. So she still holds the pants, but like, on paper, you know, he's the king.
Yeah. Well, and Jean-Luc, you're right. I mean, there is that whole planning aspect that plays into this. And I mean, it plays on all sorts of sides, right? In terms of the civil conflict that we see in Volume 2, there's obviously foresight that's been put into things, because you're questioning, like, how did George know to assemble all the corrupt nobles around him? How did, you know, all that kind of stuff too, right?
I'm really impressed by the foreshadowing. Like, there's a lot of stuff that, like you said, with George, like, a lot of things you wonder, like, why he's being like this. Like, it often come off as George being stubborn, but when you get to Volume 4, say, oh, there was actually a really good reason behind it.
Yeah, and I would like to say that, like, this series handles rebellions in, like, a really realistic way, and I would say the politics as well. Like, it isn't, like, as great as, say, like, the politics, or as sophisticated as, say, like, Legend of the Galactic Heroes or Gonkotsuo, the Count of Monte Cristo, when it comes to, like, political intrigue or depth. But, like, as far as, like, light novels goes, like, Realist Hero does a really good job, especially, like, with the rebellion, because, like... Like, for example, if you read a lot of history, you'll see there's a lot of history of when, you know, where's thy notes? Oh, yeah, like, for example, people rebelling because they don't accept the main character as king, which has happened a lot in history. Like, if you take a look at the Royal Family of England, for example, you'll see that there's quite a few, like, some things that, like, for example, when a king or queen has died or been killed in battle and no successor has been named and etc., you know, there's been quite a few, you know, wars of who would take the throne or a succession crisis. Like, for example, when Henry I died due to reasons which is too numerous to name, and due to, like, a political reason, the country dived into a civil war called the Anarchy. And if anyone here is an expert on, like, British history or stuff like that, they'll definitely know the more details. So just, like, comment what I forgot to mention in the description or, you know, the comments section. And basically it was a civil war that lasted from 1135 to 1153 between England and Normandy for control of the throne. And another thing is that when an established leader or authority figure dies or steps down, it causes something called a power vacuum. Basically what happens is that anyone who wanted to be that leader or that authority figure, now there's an open seat. And this also happens when there's like a new guy on the block, like Soma, who has established himself. Like, when the Dukes rebelled, they did it because he's the new guy in the worst way possible. Because for one, main character Soma, he's from a completely different world. So he's an outsider in the worst possible way. Number two, he's not even a member of the royal family who the Dukes have been serving, or their families have been serving for generations. Like, some of these Dukes have known these kings and queens since they were children and probably have, you know, established a bit of a relationship with them. And also the Duchess, she's been around since this kingdom's conception, and she's probably known, like, all the kings and queens from the time they were children. And, you know, I guess, you know, a bond or a connection comes through there because, you know, she's known these people for so long a time. And, like, they're not doing it just to be evil or, you know, just because, like, oh, we're crooked or corrupt. I mean, no, they're doing it because they care about their nation and they're concerned of what Soma is doing. And they're also concerned why their king just abdicated all of a sudden.
Yeah, and you're right. Like, that is the one... It definitely was not a surprise that there was that kind of a very strong rejection of what was happening. And I mean, even if you take a look, like you said, like, as I said, everything builds up, right? So in Volume 1, I mean, Soma is made king under very odd circumstances. And Albert really does not explain to the Dukes what's going on, or to anybody for that matter. He doesn't even tell Soma. He's just like, congrats, kid, you're the king. Have a nice day.
I just cannot wait to be king.
Yeah, and then I mean, once Soma, even though Soma doesn't necessarily embrace the role right away, he does embrace it enough because he realizes that if he doesn't start running the kingdom in a way that makes the kingdom money, he's going to get himself shuffled off to fight the Demon Lord, which is going to be a lot worse for him and potentially a lot more dangerous than if he just sort of stays on the back lines in this little backwater kingdom. And so, I mean, in Volume 1, he starts doing things like building roads. He starts using, they've got this broadcast system, the Jewel broadcast system, starts using that in ways that nobody's thought of before. He starts assembling a team of people that, again, like you said, Bio, outsiders, people that haven't been typically in positions of power, but he brings them in because he recognizes that they have talents. He starts building roads. He starts building a brand new city, for God's sakes. Like, he does all of these things that are massive changes compared to a king who has obviously ruled for many a decade who's done nothing.
Okay, and what I really like about what he's doing, like, he's not per se taking thing that exists in our world and applying it to this new world. Like, he thinks, like, okay, let's see, like, they achieve this kind of technology through this and this mean, historically speaking, and applying knowledge from our world will scrap all of that progression. So basically, he's trying to find new ways to apply modern concept, but in like that world's way. And that's what I find brilliant. Like, the author just doesn't go and, okay, like, let's mine metal, let's build electronic things and mechanic thing. He just uses what he has on hand. Like, they have this kind of crystal that can broadcast image. Well, let's kind of do a television broadcast, but with the mean of that native world.
Yeah, but the thing is that if he started, like, introducing modern concepts like firearms and tanks, he would start a massive tech boom. Like, just like in the first couple of weeks.
Yeah, but they kind of explain why he doesn't do it. Like, when you imbue magic in something, like, the larger the object is, the better it will be. So you can, like, easily outperform a gun with a cannon, because imbuing a bullet with magic is gonna be useless against a cannon that has a bigger surface to put magic inside of the bullet.
I do wonder if, too, he's a little concerned about, like, outpacing his knowledge and his world's, you know, sphere of, you know, tech and war tactics and things, because what he knows is basically from history. So I wonder if he's just trying to do not the bare minimum, but close to it, enough advancement, but not enough that he would just, like, totally be beyond his game, basically. You know, I do wonder if that's an aspect.
Yeah, but the thing is, if he started, like, for example, he brought in tanks, he's using all these advanced tactics, like, that's going to be a red flag for all the other kingdoms. And it's going to give them justify them invading him to take him out, because he's making all these big moves. He's got these tactics that no one's heard of. He's doing all these things, and he's like, his armies are like destroying other armies, and people are like panicking. It's like, oh no, he's going to invade us. We got to attack first. And, like, basically, he doesn't want to create more enemies before he has to.
But I think that Soma himself even acknowledges, and again, like, I agree with you, this whole idea of making what he knows fit with this world. He even says at one point, he's like, obviously things in this world have developed differently because of the involvement of magic. Like, we developed technology because we didn't have magic. If we had had magic, would we have developed technology? Would we have even needed technology, right? Like, would even one of our modern tanks, there's probably a spell that could render it useless or destroy it in one hit. So I think what he's doing, and you're right in that whole idea of being cautious, I think what he really does, especially in the first volume, I mean, he's just looking at it and going, okay, I've got problems. The country is really poor. Everybody is starving. It's filthy and dirty. And if I can't fix those things, I get deported. So
you also forgot the migrants. He needs to build a wall.
Yeah, that's for book four, buddy. but I mean, so like really when it boils down to it, I mean, this is the same thing, I think, with what Jean-Luc was saying, right? Is that he's taking modern knowledge of, okay, how have we survived with, you know, in moments that we needed food? Okay, we diversified our food supply because we knew that you had to grow things during certain seasons, which means they weren't available during other seasons. So we have to diversify our food supply. So that's immediately what he sets out to do. It's a modern idea, but it's easy to apply to this world because it doesn't interfere with their technology. It doesn't interfere with their culture or their magic or whatever. It's just a concept. It's just saying to somebody, and I mean, that's where he grabs that one guy, what is it, Pocho or whatever?
Poncho. Poncho. The fat guy. And he has him eat a bunch of shit.
Poncho, yeah. And he, and you know, grabs him and he's basically like, you're a gourmet. Like, you've tried all sorts of different things. Find me different foods that nobody thinks to eat, but that they can, and it'll keep them alive. And like I said, it's not a wild and crazy idea overall, but definitely, you know, when you have a world that's very set in its ways, it could be kind of revolutionary, but it's easy to apply. It doesn't contradict anything that they're already doing. And I think that, like you said, Bio, I mean, for him, it's like, what moves can I make that are big enough that they will solve this internal crisis, but are small enough that nobody else is really going to be bothered by them or is going to notice a whole lot or see it as a threat.
So I was just going to say earlier, another aspect to his dark magic skill, like he could make a bunch of puppets and put like a bunch of bayonets on them. Maybe he could make a ton of them. But if he did that, I feel like that's more his ace up the sleeve. Like, it's more of an espionage kind of thing, like with those puppets. It's not like something where, like, if he could totally do it, but then everybody would know what they are. So, you know, I think it is more of an ace up the sleeve. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And plus when he's playing like this 4D chess game with all these other countries, like, do you really want to give away your trump card?
Well, no, obviously not. And that's, and I mean, well, and that's it. Right. And I mean, this is what we see with Soma and his Prime Minister Hakuya, where they're plotting all of these different things and movements and everything else, and that they are trying to do everything in a way that's a little bit underhanded. But
which is what Machiavelli would have recommended.
Well, yeah, especially when you're in such a power, when there's such a disparity between your power and everybody else's, right? Like, I mean, Amidonia, which is the country that invades them in the second book, they're in pretty much sort of the same state as Alfriedin, where they've got a food crisis and everything else, but they've spent a lot more on trying to improve their military power as opposed to Amidonia, which kind of had just fallen apart in general. So, you know, I think it's that he's still looking at staying within his bracket. He's not trying to take on the Empire. He's not trying to take on the Demon Lord. Like, he's just kind of looking at his own little house and going, okay, well, this is what we're going to do. But if we do this and, you know, the generals rebel or the dukes rebel, we've got to be prepared because Amidonia hates us, and the second they see weakness, and we also know that there's nobles that have been conspiring with them and everything else, like, they're going to make a move.
Yeah, and it's a very logical move, but it's a very logical move because, what, like, your greatest enemy is at his weakest. Like, why wouldn't you just go, like, shank the knife and twist it and go deeper?
Well, especially when we have this whole thing with, like, the Declaration of Mankind or whatever that Amidonia has not signed. So technically Alfriedin has not signed, which means they are not technically an ally of the Empire at that point. So Amidonia, it's kind of a gray area, right? Because Amidonia is kind of like, well, you know, we can attack, and because we're not expanding our borders into any country that's signed on to the declaration. Like, they think they'll be able to get away with it because of that.
But the problem is they ran into a brick wall.
Well, a brick wall called solid planning, and like a literal wall.
Actually, there's actually a thing that happened to this in history. For example, Obi Nobunaga, he was attacked by a warlord who was making his way to Kyoto, and he's outnumbered, you know, 5-10 to 1. I forgot the name of the battle, but basically what happens is due to tactics and planning and good luck, Obi Nobunaga manages to defeat this warlord who's invading his territory, and that kind of just kickstarted his unification of Japan. But basically what happened is, like, the enemy, they'd taken some forts, and Obi Nobunaga, you know, decides to take to the field. It's Okozama, that's right, the Battle of Okozama, that's right. Basically what Obi Nobunaga does is there was, like, a rainfall, and, you know, the enemy warlord is setting up camp. And basically what happens is all his troops, like, march around and surround the camp while the thunderstorm is going on. And then they charge in with such ferocity, and the guy goes out, like, what's going on, to get impaled by Oda Spearman.
Well, it's, Soma actually mentions Nobunaga a number of times as well, right?
Nobunaga was the thing about, like, Nobunaga is that he was, like, one of the most progressive warlords. Like, he would actually have generals do commanding for him. And, like, back in those days, like, usually, say, for example, like, Usagi Kenshin, like, if, say, the Kenshin army was going to war, you know, Usagi Kenshin would be there in person, you know. Like, if the Tokugawa army was going to war, Tokugawa Ieyasu would be there in person, you know. Or if, say, the Takeda were going to war, you know, Takeda would be there in person, or a family member would be there in person.
Yeah. It definitely, I think the thing that you see, and they even mention this a number of times in the series, is that one of Soma's greatest strengths is that he's able to select people that are right for the job, and to be able to delegate to those people.
Yeah, because he's confident in his central authority, because he knows that, oh, I'm not a combatant, but how about I get a dude who is a combatant and a really good general, you know? Like, that's a wise king knows what he's good at and what he's bad at. And what he's bad at, well, he gets people who are good at it, so they complement each other.
Yeah.
It's the same thing of, like, Obi Nobunaga. Like, if he did not split up his authority to, say, like, his retainers or his generals, he wouldn't have covered as much ground as he would have, because he would have to be leading every single attack, you know, against the Usai and the Takeda and, you know, all these other factions, or, you know, he would have to be there for every single battle, and he wouldn't be able to, like, set up his authority up in Kyoto, because that's what he was doing most of the time. Like, the only times he went into battle was when they burned down, like, Mount Hiei and a few other battles, but usually when he took to the field, it was pretty decisive. But, you know, he usually left it up to his generals. Like, 7 out of 10, Obi Nobunaga was, like, in Kyoto, you know, drinking tea, and looking at all these, like, fancy shit that these, like, Jesuit priests have, like, sent him. It's like, oh, look at this cool clock.
All right. Well, so we have Volume 1, where we have Soma, who establishes all of this infrastructure, basically gets the kingdom back on its feet in terms of at least people are getting fed. And he manages by, you know, routing out corruption and making all sorts of tax reforms and stuff like that. Like, he starts actually, like, basically performing an audit on the kingdom's finances and starts finding all of this money that nobles have been hoarding and stealing and everything else. And so he's able to basically buy out his freedom, and he's able to feed people, which, you know, people like to be fed. That usually makes you popular with them if you feed them.
Yeah, and because he's done that, he's secured his love. The common people now love him. So say, for example, he gets, like, dethroned, the common people will rebel because they have love for him. Like, this is the man who has kept us fed. He's, you know, making our country flourish. I mean, why wouldn't you keep this guy in power? Like, say, for example, like, he got attacked, and he had to retreat from the capital. Like, I'm pretty sure all those civilians would, like, rise up and fight, you know. We want our king back, you know, get rid of this tyrant, you know.
Well, I mean, we already see that, right? Like, I mean, again, it's kind of getting ahead of things, but, I mean, we see that happening with Vaughn in Amidonia in Book 4, right? Yeah. Is basically, yeah, that same idea. And I mean, and of course, the joke of that is that Soma does it intentionally. Like, he knows that he's planted these seeds. Like, that's his whole point. It's, you know, it's, I mean, again, like I find myself, I like Soma because I'm like, you're not a bad guy, but man, you just do what needs to get done.
Yeah, like basically with Vaughn, he gave them the stick and then the carrot.
Like, he never really gave them the stick, though. Like, I mean, he beat the army.
The stick was fucking up their army and killing the
king. Okay, but I mean, in terms of the average citizen, though, it's not like he ever did anything to the average citizen. Yes, okay, like, there's obviously a psychological thing, having your army defeated, having your king killed. But it's not like he rode into town and started going like, oh, kill one third of the civilians just to prove a point.
Well, it just brings them like this new point of view, like they're this new way of life, and they just discover it by themselves. And after that, they're just, no way we're going back to that other shit.
I think he did send some of his like spy network or whatever it was to rile up an uprising, though, in volume 3 later on.
So, in volume 4 he comes right out and basically admits that, you know, he helped fan the flames a little bit and make sure that there was stuff going on. But I mean, but again, like, he knows when he's setting up things like the entertainment, the Lorelei network in Vaughn and Amit and Elfried, and he knows when he's setting that up, when he's giving food to people, he knows, and when he allows people to wear whatever they want to wear, paint their houses that however they want to be painted, like, he knows the second you give people freedom and you give people entertainment and you give people some happiness, that they won't ever want to let go of that freedom again. So, and then he's advertising very plainly that, who gave you that freedom? Yeah, that's right, this guy. This guy right here. This is your guy.
We want him as king.
It's even on the bridges.
It's even on the bridges. I love that he put the names of his own people on the bridges they built just to mess with them. Like, but you know what I mean? Like, that was, like, and that's, again, like, I love that. That's a little detail in this series that you've just got to look at and you got to love, is that, you know, so I'm thinking most people who are listening to this podcast have read the series, because if you haven't, God, we're spoiling everything. but I just love, like, they have that kind of a little detail where they're like, yeah, we rebuilt bridges. They'll probably break them. Hey, you know what? That'll piss people off in Amidonia. Hey, let's make sure they break them by putting our names on them, because then they'll really want to break them. And then...
That was pretty funny. Like, you know, if Soma really wanted to be, like, that dictator and this thing I'm, like, saying, you know, don't be cruel with intent, like, you know what he could have done? Like, he could have rolled into town with, like, a throne made out of skulls, like, with, the, like, him holding the king's head and all his retainers. And like drinking out, like, and drinking like a goblet full of their blood, and going.
Well, and again, like, you know, this is, but, and you know, this is what you were saying about Machiavelli, though, right? Is cruelty with a purpose is okay, but cruelty just for the sake of cruelty will eventually have you betrayed.
Yeah, because who's going to trust you? Like, who's going to trust you? Like, say, for example, like, you're the minister of a king, and he's, like, fucking flayed some people just because. Like, you're not going to trust him, because you're just going to feel like, am I going to be the next victim of his, like, cruel, malicious jokes or his sadism? Like, you know?
And that's it, exactly. And, I mean, Soma knows that it's... I think Soma demonstrates that idea of where we are now with politics, where everything is image, right? It's all about how you sell yourself. And to have him roll into town and be like, hey, you're starving? Here's food. Hey, ladies, you've always wanted to dress up but never been allowed because this is like a totalitarian, you know, military state. Hey, how about you put on something pretty? Yeah, that's right. Go ahead.
Justice Arstone, the actual term is like totalitarian militant state.
All right, fine. I'm sorry. My tongue is not working the way I want it to.
It's fine. But, you know, like, he basically gives them the carrot. It's like, look at all this freedom you can enjoy, and all you have to do is bow down to me.
Well, and again, like, really, it would be one thing if he was rolling into some place that was a democracy and saying, throw away democracy and worship me as your king. But really, for people that are like, oh, we've got one king or we've got another king, which king do you want? Right? And that's exactly what he's playing at. It's just that whole thing of, I'm not even changing your government. There's still a king. There's still going to be governors and people in my entourage, nobles, and nobles. And,
you know,
it's not changing anything except that your king's going to let you have a good time. And he's going to make sure you get fed. I mean, my God, like...
And he's going to protect your freedom. He's going to protect your liberty. Yeah. You know, don't violate the nap.
I mean, seriously. So, I mean, you know what? So we're jumping all over the place here.
there was two things I wanted to bring up from the first volume. But
Go ahead.
Like, first thing, when he starts calling out to people with talent, like he wants to recruit people that have talent that he'll be able to use for the sake of the kingdom. Like, it states that... there's supposed to be three people in that room, well, three person in that room that are, that will make history. And I don't know for you guys, but when I was reading it, like, I was, oh, it will be like the three girls, like, obviously. And it ends up being the total opposite. Like, I was, oh, wow, okay, didn't see that coming.
Oh, where he starts actually looking at the guys and like it's not just a harem that he's assembling. Like, it's, is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. The thing I want to say about like Soma's, like the idea of calling out to people is that he makes himself more interactive because he's no longer this fucking king in this castle that will lord over his, you know, subjects. Like, he's just a, you know, come to the castle, introduce yourself. You know, if you've got a talent, I'll use you. Like, I don't care if you're like a rogue, a barbarian, or a noble, or a thief. If you've got a talent and I need you, come on to the castle. Be one of my retainers. Here, go date some noble woman, you know.
Well, I mean, it's, well, and again, it's like you said earlier, Bio, it's the whole idea of a king recognizing where he has weaknesses. He's not from that world. He doesn't know what's edible and what's not edible. He doesn't know even what kind of songs or entertainment people, whether they even do songs or entertainment, like he knows nothing, right? And so he allows himself to show that weakness and to assemble this group of people. And yeah, I'm with you, Jean-Luc. I expected there was going to be some mad crazy harem come out of that right away, but it really didn't happen. Like, I'm
not yet.
Well, I mean, he ends up, like, obviously he ends up with a harem, but even, I mean, even by harem standards, only four girls is not that crazy. I mean, really.
Well, he doesn't want too many lovers and kids because, you know, it'll create a succession crisis. And should we actually talk about, like, how polygamy works in this world? Because, like, I would say that's at least one positive I have of this series is sort of how that whole harem thing works.
Oh, yeah, we can talk. Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're absolutely going to talk about that. Well, we'll talk about it because we're talking about his wives and all that kind of stuff right now. So obviously we have wife number one, which is Licia, who he is betrothed to. She is the princess of Elfriedin. The king kind of, man, it sounds terrible, but the king basically threw her in as a bonus. Hey, Soma, you're going to be king. And by the way, have my daughter. Although to be...
No, it's more like he was pimping out his daughter. It's like, yes. Oh, by the way, you're the king now, and to make you more legitimate, go send my daughter to the plow.
Yeah, well, that I was going to say that was the whole idea, was that it was more to legitimize him as king because he has that whole royal bloodline connection, yeah.
Yeah, and also, like, the thing I like about their relationship is that she's not, like, into him straight away, and Soma's just like, hey, if you want to cancel off this relationship, I'm perfectly fine, and you can keep your, like, princess status, like, kind of as, like, you'll be, like, a backup ruler, you'll be, like, producing the next heir or something, or, you know, do whatever you want, because I'm king. Like, I kind of like that aspect of that relationship. Like, she's not just, like, throwing herself on the new king. It's like, oh, my king, I'm now going to be your queen. Like, it's more like, who the fuck are you? Why did my dad, you know, pimp me off to this stranger?
Yeah, I really like that about her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know what? That's the one thing, I think that's why, like, I like their relationship, I think, maybe best out of the whole series so far. And I think part of it is, for that reason, is that you feel like their relationship, they've earned it. They started off as strangers, they were forced together, but they didn't just like, it wasn't like love at first sight or anything. Like Soma, like you said, Bio, like Soma was kind of like, yeah, I'm just kind of here and got to do this right now. And when it's over, if you want to walk away, cool. Like, we're good. You can become queen. I'll go home. Like, we're fine. You know? And even for Leisha, she was kind of like, well, this situation is kind of stupid and I don't understand why my old man did it, but impress me, dude. Like, show me whether you're worth this or not. Like,
yeah, just to dive into that, like, back in, like, the olden days, like, if you were, like, a woman and you're, like, forced to be married to a man, like, generally that relationship, I mean, it's not, like, not all, because there are exceptions, but generally, like, if you're a woman in that, like, kind of relationship, you know, you're expected to, you know, bend over and take it, you know, there was none of this, like, I don't love you, fuck off. Like, in, like, back in the 16 or 15 or 1400s, like, that would have never flied. Like, that, like, if Soma was one of those types of people, like, he would have probably had sex with her, like, right then and there, if he wasn't busy doing paperwork.
Well, but I mean, I think that well, in a way, you're right. Well, you're definitely right in our culture. And you know what? And it's not like she rejects him right out. Like, you know, she is cautious. She isn't, like, throwing herself at him, but at the same time, she's kind of like, I'm in a position here that I have to be careful. And I like watching their relationship develop where it moves from that caution around each other to the point where you really do feel like they're in love with each other. Like, and it feels like they've earned it. It wasn't just something that kind of happened or that just kind of got thrown together or was convenient, you know?
Yeah, she sees him as a man that's worthy of being king. And of course, because she's a royalty and she gives a shit about this kingdom, you know, this responsibility that she has thrown upon her, she sort of falls in love with him and she's like, you know, you're the king this country deserves and I don't mind being your queen or, you know, to bear, you know, your offspring or stuff like that. You know, I'm not just being forced and pimped out of some loveless marriage that I'm just like, she's not like, she loves him and she isn't like one of those marriages where she's just there to produce offspring that she may not even want or love.
One thing also is like love aside, like the further you get into the volumes, like in other light novel, you would have had the typical like harem, like with like girl and guy chasing around after each other's. And in that one, you see like their relationship, you see it developing into a really legit family, and not just with one girl, with all of them. Like it's something a bit refreshing, I'd say. Like, it's more a realist take on what a harem is supposed to be.
Yeah, because like some of the girls that he is like quote unquote married to, like some of them are just like at the start are like political connections, and then they develop into romance. So it isn't just about like, oh, I'm having this kid with you to legitimize your relationship. It's more like, well, I really like you and you're a really swell guy, and because you're such a great king, I'm going to marry you and I feel honored or privileged to be part of this like venture with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I what I've said about the harem aspect, and I guess, you know, in terms of how this works, so polygamy obviously is allowed in this world. And I mean, really, that's not that shocking. And basically what they have is they have first wives who can claim succession. But usually what happens is you have a first wife and our first primary is primary, sorry. So you have your first primary wife who is considered to be the wife immediately in line that her child would be in there for succession. And then you have your second primary, and then you have your secondary wives who are basically like, can be political allies or people that are of lower birth, but who have, you know, shown exemplary ability or whatever that the king basically keeps close to him because of their ability.
There's a thing I want to mention that, like, Like, when Oba Nobunaga's dad died, there was a bit of a succession crisis because what had happened is that his older brother was considered illegitimate because his mother was a mistress. Well, Oba Nobunaga's mother was not, so his mother was a wife. So even though he was younger, and technically it would have been like the elder son who took over, but because his older brother was illegitimate, Nobunaga took over as like the head of that particular household.
Yeah.
And It's because his mother was a wife, while his older brother was not.
Yeah.
And technically Oba Nobunaga's father wasn't even the head of the Oda clan. He was more like in a council of elders. And I won't go deeper into that. Like, look this, Google up this shit yourself. But that's another thing. Like, you know, like any child that comes from, the blonde chick, because I can't pronounce her name for shit. But, you know, any child that comes from her, they're directly in line. And any other child from other Soma's hero mates, like, yes, they're royalty and yes, they're nobles, but then they're illegitimate. Like, unless, like, worst case scenario happens, they are not valid. Like, the only thing there is, like, carry on the bloodline and maybe, like, in case, like, the main house is, like, the main family royal house is sick or disrepute, they can take over.
Yeah.
Because they have that royal family connection.
Isn't one of them a second primary queen, though? Are any of them second primary queens?
Yes.
Aisha, right?
Yeah.
Aisha, so just in case, maybe that child could take over?
Well, it's sort of... So the way that it basically works is that you can only be a primary queen if you are of noble birth, but anybody can be a secondary queen. And only the offspring of primary queens can be in the line of succession. But this line of succession would go... first primary, and then, like you said, worst case scenario, if that child dies or she can't have children, whatever, then it would fall to the child of the second primary queen or the third primary, whatever, right?
Also, it also prevents succession crises because, like, for example, like, imagine Soma's kids growing up and they have to live up to the standard of this great king. Now, for one, they're going to be pressured to achieve more. And for secondly, you know, like, all his kids, you know, it prevents fighting, like, infighting, essentially. Because, all the other kids from the other families will know that, yes, I'm of noble birth, but, you know, I'm not going to inherit the throne, unless worst-case scenario. And maybe it's not really a good idea for me to try and create that worst-case scenario, because then I would court conflict with my other brothers and sisters who want power as well. So it basically keeps it out. It kind of balances itself out. Like, say, for example, like, Soma has three kids of his main wife. Like, these three people, they're the head honchos. And the other ones, they can just be nobles or do whatever else they want somewhere else, you know?
Well, I think it's... that's probably the one place where this series... we've been talking about how the series has some very... logical steps in terms of the conflicts and stuff like that. But I will say that I think the whole harem aspect is probably the most optimistic part of this whole series, is that, as particularly with the fourth book, the way that they start working the dynamic there. I mean, basically what it boils down to is that only Leisha, the first primary, wants her kid to be king. Like, the other girls are just content to be part of the family. They don't even care. And in fact, Roroa, the princess from Amidonia, she's like, I don't want to be royalty. I don't want my kid to be a royal. Oh, I want my kid to have, like, a business. You know?
Maybe her kid can be, like, part of the merchant class.
Well, that's kind of it.
That'd be the most, like, awkward family. Like, imagine if he, like, they had kids, and that's the most awkward thing. Like, Daddy, what happened to Grandpa? Oh, your grandpa was killed by your father in Mortal Kombat.
Well, I mean, you know, yeah. Well, what can you do?
He also ousted your Unki as well. What happened to my Unki? Oh, he got kicked out of the kingdom after your father showed how much of an incompetent ruler he was.
Well, to be fair, Rora had kind of had a hand in that herself.
Another thing about his harem I really like is they're not just there to be pretty. Like, they actually serve a purpose. Like, for example, Arola, like, she's a merchant. Then you have, like, the dark elf chick who's, like, she's a warrior and, you know, she's a bodyguard. And you have, like... the blue-haired chick she's a songstress, she could be, like, a rogue or something like that, and then you have, like, the main queen who's just assisting Soma in her work. Like, all of them, like, serve a purpose, and they're not just there to be, like, you know, for Soma to take the plow to pop up royal ears.
Yeah, you're right. And they also avoid that whole cliche harem of, all the girls are competing for the guy, and really it's just like they're all there. Well, I said this in one of my reviews. I was like, you know what? They're not just there to be waifus. They're not just there to be like, oh, I love tsunderes, so I've got to have a waifu tsundere in there, and I've got to have a yandere, and I've got to have this and all this kind of stuff. Like you said, they actually serve a role. Like the kingdom is only functioning because of their presence. They are important to the kingdom and to Soma and for his rule to continue. So it's not like they're just there as the pretty faces or the, you know, fan service characters.
Yeah, and there's almost no fan service like images in these books. Like there's not a whole lot of like objectification of women in these books. Like there's nothing like that. So it's definitely fair, I think, to the sexes, yeah.
Yeah, and also, like, Soma doesn't have really much time for that stuff, and the reason they don't compete is because they realize it's like, you know, we can get it on whenever we want. Like, Soma's busy with his kingdom and stuff. Like, we can do that stuff later. We're in no rush. I mean, he's only been a king for, like, what, a year or two?
I think it's a year. I think it's 6 months by the time the fourth book starts.
He's been a king for 6 months. Like, you know, Soma's healthy. Like, he'll be around for he'll be around for at least a couple of decades if he's not, like, assassinated or killed in battle. So, you know, we've got plenty of time to, you know.
Well, I mean, and Soma, we find out in book four, and I mean, this again is where, like, you kind of are like, oh, Soma, I know you just beheaded, like, 12 nobles because they were corrupt, but you're such a nice guy. It's like, when he basically reveals to Licia that one of the reasons that he hasn't been with her is because he's afraid that with the current medical technology that their child wouldn't survive. And so he was waiting until he had trained doctors who could ensure that his children would have the best chance of survival. That's that whole thing in book four where he reveals the whole doctors and everything else that he's been doing.
Yeah, and it's also because, like, you know, because the royal family, they're going to be targets for anyone who wants to dethrone Soma or take them hostage, because, you know, it's like, oh, by the way, I've got your kids, you know, your heirs. Like, what would he do? Like, he would raise heaven and hell to get them back. And, you know, best case of scenario. I mean, if you're trying to groom up your royal heirs, you want them to be as safe and protected as possible while training them, you know, how to be a king or how to be an effective combatant in order to defend themselves from people who would want to take the throne.
Well, I think it just shows that for Soma, he is thinking about his relationship with these girls. He isn't just seeing them as tools to be used or, you know, to sow his seed or whatever. It's that he has genuine affection for them, and he wants to make sure that if they're going to go ahead and have kids at some point, that they need to be as safe as can be, and that, you know, that he's going to be able to rely on the fact that, you know, like we do in our modern world, that really something happening to the baby or the mom during childbirth is an anomaly as opposed to the norm, which it is in this world that he's currently in.
Yeah, and also because he'll be, you know, he has to take responsibility, you know, he can't just, like, pop off kids and just, like, fuck off, you know, he's the king. He has to take responsibility and be a good father to the children that he brings into this world, which a lot of people in modern day aren't so much, but, you know. And also, if he keeps his wives happy, then he won't have his kids, like, scheming against him. It's just like, I'm going to take over the throne because he's such an asshole to my mum. Like, there'll be none of that.
And a good example of what both of you have been saying, like, after the Civil War, like, when Castor's daughter, Calla, is being, treated as a prisoner of war, and you have Licia, who's, like, appealing to Soma and, oh, take her as a, like, slave wife or something. Like, she desperately wants to save her life. Like, she points out all of her good quality and how she looks and everything. And Soma's, well, I don't care about her. Like, he doesn't have any attachment. So there's, again, this thing, like, he doesn't see the girls he's close with as only being romantic interest. Like, Like, if he doesn't see a kind of purpose, like, for the foundation of a family and, like, helping his kingdom, like, he doesn't care.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a very similar thing to, like, similar to, like, Overlord. Like, for example, if you're, like, on Iron School's down team, then you're all hunky-dory. But if you're not on the Iron School team, well, you know, you're fucked. You're gonna die, or you're just a pawn to be used and abused.
Well, I don't know whether I'd go quite that far with Soma, but I think that in terms of Jean-Luc's statement that, it again, it's showing the difference between the harem in this book, in this series, compared to a lot of other harems. He's not just looking at a girl going, wow, you're super cute, join my team, you know? Like other than Roroa, who is basically like, he kind of has no choice. He's like, yeah, you're going to be a wife because A, I recognize that you're super smart and you've got talents that I absolutely need.
Well,
and B,
she's a merchant princess. She's a merchant princess.
Yeah, but the other one, he doesn't have much of a choice as well. Like, Lisha is...
Well, no.
Well, he has a choice, but, like, it wouldn't... Like, it would have been badly seen from the people if he had rejected Lisha. And like when Aisha's father pushed her toward Soma, like it's Lisha who said, no, you take her as a wife. And then you have Juna, which mainly follows the same pattern. Like he's more or less in a position to say, well, all right, I accept. Like,
yeah, I think the whole thing of her is because, you know, A, she's got a lot of economic smarts and she's like established trader, and B, it like legitimizes Soma's rule even more because she's the princess of Anadonia.
Yeah.
So it's not like, and all the other nobles will see like, oh, he's treating this country so well, he's treating the princess so well, you know, why not, you know, let us like go see who this man is. Like, if the princess of Anadonia is good with him, like, you know, why can't we?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's definitely like that's like I said, that's the one harem member where their relationship is kind of like right away. But you realize that he has zero choice. Like there, it doesn't matter what he does. He's got to go with her. He has to marry her.
Well, it's also because of her personality. Like she's my favorite character. Like she's this straightforward woman. Like she knows what she wants. And like, Soma, I think what appealed, how she appealed to him is showing that she can outsmart him and she's is equal in terms of economic knowledge.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And again, like that's where, like I said, if you look at, you know, if you look at the harem members, that's it. They all serve a purpose. They all fill in a weakness that Soma has. Like, even Aisha, with her, like, Soma's not strong. So having a wife who is, you know, a strong warrior, who knows about battle, who knows about tactics, who can basically train the royal children to be warriors, you know, like, that's a benefit. Let alone the fact that it makes an alliance with the Dark Elves that are part of Alfriedin that, you know, apparently are pretty badass archers and stuff. Like, that doesn't hurt either. The way the harem is set up in this one, it's probably my favorite harem in terms of being not feeling sleazy.
Oh, it's definitely my favorite.
Yeah, another good thing just to mention is there's a lot of other relationships in this series. Like, it's not just Suma and his harem. There's a lot of other side characters that you at least get the sense. You either get the sense that there's going to be romance, like Poncho and Serena, potentially. There's the mad scientist and Woodman Arcs. So there's a lot of other relationships developing. Even Hal, he has Kaede. And then also, they kind of hint at something that will happen in the future. Like, I don't know if we'll actually see it, but he ends up marrying a dark elf in the future. Like, I thought that was kind of interesting.
And he also has another one later on.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think it's the nobles who practice polygamy a lot. But another thing I want to mention on, and these are like just very slight spoilers, like for volume 5, like a lot of like Soma's retainers get like letters of marriage from nobles and proposals, because it's like well, the king's not going to allow us, but you know, how about we try and, you know, get some political power by dating his trying to marry into his retainers, because even though they won't be marrying into the royal bloodline, their children or they themselves will be in positions of authority and they'll be close to the king. And who's to say that their daughter or son won't say marry the daughter or son of one of the of Soma's.
Well, that's not even a spoiler, because in, what is it, in volume 3, isn't it all the girls in Amidonia start coming onto Poncho?
Yeah.
Because they realize like how powerful he is and how much Soma relies on him.
Yeah, and it's only Serena that ends up saving him.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, exactly. And that's where you said, like, you know, you start getting the idea that there might be something there, yeah, eventually. So then we have, like, of course, the civil war and everything else. I want to talk a little bit about how Soma deals with the dukes.
Yeah.
In book 3.
I also want to talk about that as well, because, like, you continue. I'll say my point.
Yeah, later. Well, no, because I mean, there's something that's very... I mean, first of all, I'm just kind of wondering your thoughts on it, but also because there's also something that's hinted at very, very heavily that I got the impression, and I just want to see if you guys share that impression. So just as the quick summary, so for George, he basically leaves him some wine or whatever that's poisoned so he can kill himself. For Castor, he's basically like, you're out, you're stripped of everything, you're going to live with your mother-in-law for the rest of your life, get out of my sight, bye-bye. And then for Carla, he's like, you're going to be the royal family's personal slave. And then he says to Carla, he says, and he whispers it to her because he says he's like, if I ever become like a tyrant, basically, you're the one who has to kill me because nobody else will.
The interesting thing is what you failed to mention is that what
you forgot the Duchess.
Yeah,
the Duchess
but before itself. That, I'll just finish with what he was saying. Like with Carla, when she becomes a slave, she has this collar that she is forced to obey command. So, and if her master dies, she also dies. So it means that if he ever becomes a tyrant, she is obligated by the collar to kill him. Otherwise, she dies.
But, and then she'll die,
yeah,
as well.
But the thing is, if she kills him, she also dies. So it kind of put her in a position where she has to make sure he doesn't become a tyrant before he becomes it.
And I think that, and he kind of says that, yeah, to her, right? He's basically like, you're my insurance policy. And he also says to her that if he successfully hands off the crown, like if someone succeeds him, that she'll be freed.
Yeah.
He says that at one point. He says, and upon the day that I successfully hand over my crown, you will have your freedom. So like, basically he's put this girl in a position where, like you said, like it's a death sentence so long as he becomes something evil. So as long as he becomes a great king and stays a great king and is able to hand it off in the line of succession, she gets her freedom back.
Yeah, I just want to say that, like, with the the dukes, like, he basically gives them an ultimatum, like, you know, bow down to me or suffer the consequences, and you know what the consequences were. And it kind of sends a message to the other nobles, and we'll get what happens in volume 3 later on, but you know, it sends a message that, you know, Soma, he can be very fair, but he's willing, you know, to punish people who go, you know, who break his law or, you know, do not obey what he says. I mean, with one of the dukes, I mean, he basically has him, quote unquote, killed. The other duke, he has that duke stripped of his titles and basically just shipped off to God knows where. And like the only duke that allied with him or played ball got to keep her position.
Yeah.
You know? And that was like, hey, stay on my good books and you get to keep whatever, you get to keep your lands, your tiles and whatever, but stay on my bad side, there's going to be consequences. I'm going to enslave your daughter. I'm going to take your home. I'm going to take your holdings. I'm going to banish you from the kingdom. I'm going to force you to kill yourself,
and let's face it, like, the only reason really the caster survives is because Excel essentially lays out everything and says, anything worth that I have, give it to him in balance to save his life. Like, it's really only because of her petitioning that Soma's like, okay, I won't kill him. But he says, like, how many people did they kill, though? Like, he says, because the rule is that not only do you die, but then, like, three generations of your relatives die, too, right? Have to be killed.
He changed the rule, I think, just before. He changed it to two generations. But still, it's really bad. He also, anybody under the age of 13, he didn't kill, but still pretty bad.
Yeah, well, you had to, like, do with the law, well,
basically,
that we're
he's
in
just
place.
Saying to these people, like, basically, he's just saying, like, you know, don't fuck with me. I'm the head honcho. You know, fuck with me, and there's going to be consequences. I'm going to kill your family. I'm going to kill your wife. I'm going to kill your brothers. I'm going to kill your sisters. I'm going to burn your entire estate on fire. You know, I'm going to bring the wrath of God upon you.
Well, it's not just a question of burning thing or, like, being mean. Like, it has to do with the law that were pre-established, and not following those laws would be even worse. And
it'd be undermining his authority.
And because he doesn't want to do this, because when you have, like, the ultimatum, because he knows, like, not Albert the king, but Albert, like, the footman, like, one of his retainer, like, his father tells him what is the true purpose of George. And, well, we don't know when we're reading that part at the time, but when he's doing his ultimatum, like, he knows, and he wants to avoid Castor from following George, because, you know, George is on a suicide mission, but still Castor, for, like, his friendship with George, still lies with him. And, like, you see, like, Soma and Duchess Excel, like, trying desperately to, like, drive Castor back to reason, and it doesn't happen. And it's something that put in Soma's position must be really hard. Like, you know that he's making the wrong choice, but you're not allowed to say anything because it will spoil all of the effort that George has put to, like, the main thing he's out to do.
Yeah,
and also the thing is, it kind of showcases, like, it makes the Dukes more relatable and not that, like, mustache-twirling villains that, like, I thought they originally would be. Like, for example, Castor, he goes off to George because they are friends. Like, he is willing to throw away his title and kingdom out of friendship. Like, George, I'm going to help you no matter what. Like, even if I die, I'm gonna stay by your side because we are friends, you know. That let this kingdom be damned, I will stand by your side. And that's kind of heartwarming. Like, you know, usually people in those situations, you know, they'll just write them off or say, like, well, you're expendable. But, you know, like, Castor, he's like, you know what, I don't, you know, I'm neutral towards you, Soma, but my friend needs my help, and I'm going to help him.
Well, I think that it, you know what, it also highlights, well, I mean, it highlights a couple of things. First of all, I mean, yes, definitely their friendship plays a huge part in Castor's decision. I think it also is the fact that because George is so well respected, that Castor just can't imagine for one second that George would be wrong. He's like, if George doesn't trust this kid, and if George says we need to stand against him, then I need to follow George because George is the man. He knows what he's talking about. Like, he's got it together, right?
You know, George is a creature of honor and dignity.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he's not just mustache twirling. He's noble. He's got pride. He is chivalrous. You know, like, and Cass is like, you know, I could just chuck him under the bus, but because of our friendship, I'm going to stay by his side.
And you know what, I think of, and the thing is that when you get that reveal of what's actually going on and why George is rebelling, I mean, again, it's almost heartbreaking because you're like, Jesus, like, how must that have been for George wanting to tell Castor, like, dude, just stay out of it. Like, you know, but he couldn't tell him because then it would have ruined everything, right? Yeah. Like,
it was a test. You know, like George was testing Soma's character, and I feel bad for him. Like, you know, he has to, like, basically, I don't think we're going to spoil it, but, you know, like, he's given a mission that he's going to complete, like, even if it ends in his death. Yeah. Like, this is a man who cares so much about the kingdom that he is willing to do this suicide death mission, you know, to the death. Yeah. I mean, that is admirable.
Well, and that's it. Like, you know, George becomes such an admirable character because, yeah, like you said, he knows setting out this way that he's basically giving Soma the opportunity to start fresh. He is going to rout out all of the traitors because they're all going to come to his side. He's going to expose Amidonia and expose which nobles have been betraying the kingdom to Amidonia. He's going to do all of this and basically hand these traitors over to Soma on a platter. And he's going to basically, yeah, like you said, sacrifice his own life to do it. And the frustration of Soma realizing that and then having Castor sit there and like be like, oh, my God, now I've got to punish you, even though, yeah, like you got involved in something that was way above your head, like, you know, so outside the realm of what you could have even guessed was going on.
Yeah, but should we spoil the fact that George may not be dead?
Well, I was going to talk to you. Why the hell not? We're spoiling everything else.
Yeah.
But again, like, it's not something it's something that is obvious, but not obvious. Like, it's obvious, but it's never stated openly. So basically, like, you guys got that same impression, right? Like, George is the head of his black ops.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's not like, it's clearly stated, like even if you look
he basically says like that there's all the hints, the body size of the guy, the fact that he's wearing like a tiger mask or something, or like, you know, some kind of like fierce lion mask or something, and also because the guy takes an extra long glance at the princess before departing.
Yeah, but
like, it's all very heavily, I think. Now, here's my theory. Now, I mean, I know that I'm confident in saying that George is the head of the Black Cats, which is this Black Ops operation.
I'll tell you a piece of information. Like, the leader of the Black Ops is called Kagetola. It translates to the tiger of the shadow.
Mm. Which, of course, George was a lion, right?
He's a lion, but still.
So, I mean, like,
kind of close.
Still, yeah, very close.
He probably shaved his mane. Like, I think Soma said to him, like, I think Soma gave him a choice. Like, you can either kill yourself in shame, like, you can either kill yourself, or you can continue working for me for the rest of your days.
Well, and I think that now, and here's my guess, and you guys, you can say whether you agree or disagree, because Soma points out that nobody knows who the Black Cats are, right? Do you guys think, because he states that he gave the same poisoned wine to all the guys who followed George and were so dedicated to him, do you think that that's basically how he created the Black Cats? Like, basically, they're all of George's main guys, yeah?
Yeah, like, it passed as poison, but, like, there's a lot of different drugs that can pass you for dead while you're not dead.
Yeah, and that's it, exactly. I think that was my thinking. I was like, he pointed out to George basically like, yeah, I let the guys that you depend on that were great warriors, I let them do the same thing. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. We'll talk to you in a couple of hours.
there's also a spoiler for Volume 6, like, I'm not sure if I'm gonna say it, but
I know what you're talking about. Like that gives a lot of hints as well.
Okay, well, let's not, because I've only read up to Volume 4.
Well, basically, let's just say that one of the Black Ops removed his mask, and it kind of confirmed the thing. Like,
okay, all right. Well, like I said, it's so heavily implied, and again, like, it just, and it fits in basically with what Soma. You can see that Soma has tried to do is that he realizes that this is something that's all for show and that he's trying to do his best to save as many lives as possible and to not lose people that are worth keeping.
Like, he admires George's talent, like, and his person in the whole, like, the old person that he is, like he wants to keep him on his side and use him like for the good of the country. So when he's forced to kill him off, like my guess is that he found another way to like use him, and basically by emulating like the black ops of the empire.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like the thing is that like George, he's a pretty experienced warrior, and like he's a beastman that can live. I think they said they live for like 100 or 200 years.
Yeah.
So like he's a pretty experienced warrior, and you know, I think Soma finds out that you know this was all this was planned, and that like George is not being malicious. This is like a test, and he knows that George is loyal to the kingdom. So why not put him to work and just make him prove himself that, you know, you are now loyal to me and the kingdom.
And the benefit at all is that basically he's wiping out all of these people because as far as everyone's concerned, they're dead. So, I mean, it's like the perfect Black Ops team because they don't exist, right?
Yeah. They're all dead. They're all in their tombs. Yeah, go my wife. Go visit your beastman friend. Like, I actually forgot to mention Lissa, I forgot her name, I can't pronounce it for shit, but, you know, she actually has a relationship with George, and that's, like, some of the things I was talking about. You know, some of these dukes do have relationships with the royal family, I mean, especially Excel. I mean, I think they've hinting that Excel knew, like, the first king of this nation, if you want to dive into the whole history about that.
Yeah, she's, like, 500 years old.
A very good-looking 500-year-old, I might ask.
Yeah, very good-looking 500 years old.
Yeah. It shows you the kind of interesting ways that Soma manipulates things, that even though he hates this whole civil war thing, he still uses it for everything it's worth. He uses it to create basically a safeguard to get against him becoming a tyrant. He uses it to basically create like his own personal Black Ops team. Like, you know, he's able to get rid of all these corrupt nobles, and he's able to annex Amidonia and basically double the size of the kingdom.
And 6 months, I might add.
Like, I mean, it's...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like that's the one part. You know what? Like a lot of the events that happen in this series, they're like we said, there is a certain logic to them. Like they make sense, but man, like 6 months, really? You solved like the food crisis and basically conquered your one major enemy that you've had for centuries. You did that in 6 months.
Oh yeah,
like, that seems a little fast.
Should we talk about like the Hero King or something like that, because like that ties into when we talk about the characters as well.
The Hero King?
Yeah, the first king of this nation was a hero. He's the one who started it.
Oh yes. Yeah. Well, I'm just trying to think, like, we don't know a whole lot about that king, do we?
We
know that he had swanky armor. We know that from book 4.
We also know that he came from a very modern civilization, because like who else would come up with the idea of like a multicultural, multiracial society unless he's like from our time?
Yeah, I could see that too. Yeah.
Yeah, and also Excel knows him, and there's a lot of hints. Like she even says in like book 1, it's like when she sees some of the nobles that have been kicked out, you know, how drunk they are, and she's like, it's a shame that these people have fallen so far from grace, from their noble ancestors and, you know, the king who built this country. You know, like, I have a feeling that she knew the main character, like, the hero king personally, or she was, like a partner of him, or, like, part of his harem. Because...
Yeah, I could see
like,
that.
Like, the thing about Excel is that she's got enough descendants to fill up an entire small village, and in fact she even sends her own granddaughter to sort of see what Soma is like. And the thing about Excel, she's so crafty. I mean, she uses her own descendants as like a way of leverage. It's just like, yeah, I'm gonna pimp off my daughter to my granddaughter to you and see how you're doing, or I'm gonna have my children marry off nobles so I'm more politically connected. And because she's been around for 500 years, I mean, she's got a lot of experience and lots of things.
True story. Well, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, speaking of experience, like, I won't get about it, but there's a lot of that experience that goes on in volume 5.
I was going to mention that in like my negatives, but that's like a I'll do it later.
Okay.
She has experience trademark.
Oh. Okay. Well, all right then. Okay. Well, do you want to talk about some of those negatives, and then maybe we can talk about the whole why Soma was made king? Because, I mean, we're coming up on about an hour and 40 minutes, and I think we definitely need to talk about the whole why Soma was made king in such a hurry.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well,
so,
can I mention one more thing before we get there?
Absolutely.
This is something that gets brought up, and I don't think it's come into play yet. But at one point, there's a demon. The Demon King's name is mentioned, and his name is Devalroy. I think that was the name. But like, Suma knows it somehow, like almost intrinsically. And like, I'm wondering, I don't know. Do we have any hints as to why he knows it? I mean, obviously, we can probably.
Well,
maybe
I think in volume 6, you have a hint about that.
Mm.
Well, I was going to, I don't know anything for sure, but I was going to ask you guys, and this will kind of go, I guess, into the end of the book. So, I don't know, like I said, Bio, do you want to, you said there was a couple things you want to talk about that you thought were
there's a few
negatives.
Few, like, negatives I want to mention, and then you guys can say your negatives, and then we'll get into, like, the whole world and, you know, why he was made king. So,
yeah.
Now, one of the negatives I want to say is that even though the series is handled more maturely than most isekai novel, light novel bullshit, you know, it still falls into some of the pitfalls. Like, for example, there's this one dude, like, I think he was, like, the former prime minister, and he's, like, trying to set up Soma, like, having kids and trying to, like, push these people's relationship in, like, a certain direction. And it's really it's really annoying. Like, it's funny at times, but it's like, you know, this is supposed to, like, their relationships are a lot more mature than you'd think. Like, don't push them to do that. Like, they'll do it in their own time. Like, stop forcing them. Or, like, there's another scene where he gets, like, forced upon by a 500-year-old cougar to give him sex ed lessons. Hands-on, I might add, as well. And it's just like, dude, I know you guys need, like, more royal ears, but Jesus, slow down the brakes, man. He's only been king for 6 months, and these girls he's just kind of knowing, and they've just become close. Like, don't rush it. That's just annoying. Like, it's just, it's funny at the same time, but it's just kind of, you know, whatever. And another problem I have is that, like, the series seems to be losing steam really quickly. Like, in Volume 2, it had, like, a kingdom at revolt. There was, like, politicking and stuff like that. And, like, the novel sometimes feels like is that, like, Soma is playing four-dimensional chess while everyone else is playing checkers. And I kind of wish that there was, like people out there that, like, gave him a challenge, you know, people that can, you know, give him tick for tack, you know, like, someone who's just as good as him at tactics, or, like, you know, someone that can give him that challenge, because, you know, without that challenge, like, the series gets a little boring, you know? Like, who's going to care if he wins all the time, or if he's going to grow up to be this great king, you know? It's the journey that matters, not the destination.
I think one of the negatives, too, is that the only empire that maybe could, like, fully challenge him is basically friends with him. For now, at least. So he doesn't really have any, like, main enemy, just smaller nations.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think the main enemy is supposed to be the demons.
Mm-hmm.
And even there, it's hinted that he's going to seek out peace over war. So it's another solution. Like, it's maybe not as entertaining as full-on war, but it's still, for me, interesting.
I do think it's interesting, but I'm still like, where's that political intrigue? Where's this, like, you know, this weaving webs of conspiracy? Like, that is what the series is missing. And, you know, I would kind of want, you know, maybe some of his retainers or people in his family get hurt, because then it adds, like, consequences or risk. Like, then he knows it's like, oh my god, I let my guard down, and my, you know, my wife or my retainer got hurt, you know, what should I do, you know? I just wish there was a bit more stakes. I mean, like, in Volume 2, you're not even sure that he'll win. I mean, his kingdom could fall apart in any moment, and he's like, I've got to high IQ myself out of the situation, you know, what will I do, you know? And that's really, like, the series is interesting, but I think it's losing steam at times, and, like, there's interesting parts about it, but I just wish it would go a bit more in depth. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I kind of said the same thing about Volume 4. Like, I filmed my review actually today, and I said the same thing. I was like, Volume 4, the stuff that happens in Volume 4 has to happen for the series to move forward, but it just seems like such a kind of letdown volume when you compare it to all the big things that happen in Volumes 1, 2, and even partly in 3 as well, right? It's like you get to Volume 4 and you're like, yeah, I know you got to deal with the refugees, but like, really? It just seems kind of meh. And the whole thing about like, oh, let's go see the evil genius, I mean, I think what you were saying, like in terms of the comedy elements, I found the fourth volume was probably the most uneven in terms of how that was mixed. Like, it just felt like at one minute it's all goofy, haha, and then the next minute he's like, get out of my country. You know, like it felt a little all over the place to me, that last volume, like volume number 4. So I kind of get what you're saying, Gundam. And I mean, I'm kind of disappointed if that trend continues into volumes like 5, 6, and 7, because I kind of hoped that now that the whole, you know, like volume 4 basically ends with Soma has solidified his power, you know, everybody's eating, we're getting some wealth, we're actually getting to the point where we're going to become something to be reckoned with, you know, I have rebuilt the kingdom. And you kind of feel like at that point, like, okay, now we've hit that down bit. Now we're going to ramp up again, because now it's about, okay, we've rebuilt the kingdom. Now we're going to make the kingdom a world player.
Yeah.
And like, I was kind of hoping that we'd get that energy back into the series.
Like, I don't mind these cool down moments because I don't mind these moments of brevity because when shit hits the fan or when serious stuff happens, it makes it more impactful. But, you know, it's just like some of the humor I find okay. Sometimes I find it cringy. Like, the humor's kind of a mixed bag. Like, the some things I mentioned before. Like, a part of me likes it, a part of me thinks it's kind of cringy and it's kind of meh. But, you know, like when are we going to get to the serious stuff? Like, come on, I want to see some more Machiavellian politics. I want to see more these schemes of intrigue and, you know, Soma, like, ugh.
One of the afterwards from one of the books, I think it talks about how the author wanted to change the focus of the story, yeah, like away from Soma and towards side characters. Yeah. Like,
yeah, that's the fourth book. He says he actually in the web novel apparently like renamed the series. How a Realist Hero Redeveloped the Kingdom or something like that. Or
so just
because he was like, you know, I'd already rebuilt it. Now I want to develop it, right? Like,
yeah, and he has to hold on to it, you know, because his state will be worth nothing if he gets it taken away from him.
Yeah, it makes me wonder if the author, if he feels like he's almost close to playing Suma's story out, like, and they could even do a time jump later on, I don't know, but it almost feels like he wants to focus on other characters for now because he feels like he's hit the plateau with Suma's story soon, you know, once he's in the demon realm. I mean, I don't know what more they can really do to get the plot moving forward.
Yeah, and we don't have a thing where it's just like 20 volumes of Soma's slice of life, like, oh, today I spent time with my daughter. It's just like, yeah, we know you're going to be a great thing. And like that whole thing about the whole blurb thing of all, because great King Soma did this, like, a part of me likes it and a part of me hates it. Like, for one, it makes his actions seem more impactful because this is literally history that he's writing. Like, you see in your review, and I really like that part about it. But at the same time, it's kind of spoiling things. Like, you kind of think that at the end of the day, it's all going to go his way. Like, no matter what he loses, no matter what happens, he's going to come out on top. And I kind of wish they kept it more vague.
Mm. Yeah, I feel the same way.
I get what you're saying. Let's talk about the whole reveal about why Soma was made king, because I talked about this a bit in my review, but of course remained somewhat vague because I don't usually do spoilers in my reviews.
That's why you do spoilers here, to spoil that's right. Everyone.
That's right. I come to the Light Novel Podcast so I can spill my guts. So basically, what we find out is that the queen, and this is maybe part of the reason that she wears the pants, is basically able to send her memories back in time. So essentially, she has already lived a timeline where Soma was not made king, but was just made like prime minister. And effectively, because he didn't have the power to wield it as king, the king, King Albert, had basically his opinion of Soma poisoned by the corrupt nobles, and basically everything went to hell. The kingdom burned, Amidonia overran it, like, it all went to pot. And so, just basically before they die, the queen sends back her memories, and is kind of like, you need to support him, and you need to make him king, and you can't, you know, this is what happened, because you wouldn't trust him.
One thing to add is she's not only able to send her memory back, she can send all of the memory of people that she's touching. So she comes back in time with the king. So both of them knows what is going to happen.
Yeah, that alternate timeline. So basically, and this is why George ends up rebelling, because the king entrusts George with this information, because they basically come up with a plan to make sure that not only can Soma become king, but that they can root out and destroy all of this corruption before it can inhibit what Soma wants to do. So it goes a long way to explain why Soma's had, I mean, he hasn't had it easy, but he certainly has probably had it a bit easier than what he could have.
Yeah, and also I think that this big reveal, it kind of, well, for me, in the least, like, it kind of boosted my opinion of Albert. Like, he made a big decision based on stuff that only he knows, but it's still a decision that is hard to make. Like, it takes a lot of introspection to say, okay, I'm gonna step down and let someone else rule, because otherwise it won't go well. But he could have went any other possible way until he gets there. Like, it didn't have to be only the second time. Well, the first time they went back in time, they could have tried multiple things before letting Soma have the throne.
Yeah, I mean, the queen basically says that about why she chose Albert to be her husband, right? That basically he was the only one that she could foresee keeping the kingdom going until someone like Soma came along. That pretty much every other man who proposed to her or wanted her and everything else, that they were all going to lead the kingdom to ruin, even worse than what Albert did.
Yeah, she was taking the lesser of two evils. And also the thing, like, that choice that Albert makes is the thing, like, the wise king. He knows that if the kingdom continues on this path, it's going to lead to ruin. So, you know, he's going to take a bet on Soma. And because, you know, he didn't trust Soma before, it led to ruin. So he's going to say, like, I'm going to bet on you, Soma. I'm going to take a bet on it, all in on you. And if you fail, well, I guess this kingdom's doomed to ruin. But if you don't fail, then, you know, the sky's the limit. You know, what can you build from my failure?
Well, and it also gives you at least that sense of, you feel a little less like Albert's decision to betroth Licia to Soma is kind of dirt. Like, I don't want to say dirty, because, I mean, it's politics that happens all the time in medieval type societies. But you basically find out that in that alternate timeline, Licia and Soma fell in love with each other. Like, it wasn't something that Albert forced them together. They legitimate just fell in love with each other.
Yeah, they actually died together as well, which is kind of romantic and sweet when you think about it.
Yeah, and because also they met each other when Soma was expelled from being prime minister. So he was sent to George's side to be protected. And that's where he fell in love with Licia, that was acting as George's secretary. So,
Yeah,
and if I remember correctly, like, him and George died in battle. Like, it was basically like a battle to the last man with him and George and Licia, if I remember correctly.
No, I think that George fought to his last breath. But the only regret of Albert and his wife is that they don't know what happened to Soma and Licia. Like, he said that the castle was burned to the ground. And then Soma, well, he said, did you find any corpse? And Albert said, well, no, we didn't. Well, we're still alive somewhere. So it kind of gives Albert like a peace of mind. And at the same time, it kind of hint at the fact that Soma and Lisha, like, they're meant to be together, and they'll surmount about anything together.
Yeah, it makes me want to...
It's almost like this is fate.
It makes me want to see that alternate story, too. Like, maybe someday we'll get, like a side B story or something.
Yeah, a spin-off.
Like that, yeah. I don't know.
Here's... Okay, so I kind of said, like, I was of two minds about this reveal. Mm. Part of me was like, okay, it makes everything make sense, which... in a way, made me feel like it was too easy. But on the other hand, though, I was like, hold on. So that means there's this whole other alternate timeline, because Soma actually says that maybe she doesn't actually send her memories and stuff through time, that it's actually cross dimension.
Yeah.
But he says he's not going to try and get into that with them because he doesn't think they'll understand. So even Soma himself suggests that there are alternate dimensions. Now, I'm going to go out on a limb and say something really crazy here, but this is my like, I've read way too many light novels theory, okay? So Soma says to Albert, and you're right, gives him that peace of mind. He says, did you find the bodies? He says, no. He's like, then we survived. Because he's like, because if Lisha and I were in love and we were together, there's no way I would have let her die. And if we were working together, we would have solved it and gotten out, because... we have proven, even in this world, to be pretty unstoppable when we work together.
Yeah, and also, if they were lovers, they would have died together. Like, he would have, like, she...
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, he's like, we would have found us together, because there's no way I would have died without her.
No, like, literally, they'd find their bodies, and, like, his hands, like, on hers, just grip, and rigor mortis, and gripping tightly, like, I'm not gonna let you go, bitch, even the grave won't stop me.
But here's my crazy theory. So... like you said, Terrence, Soma shows some recognition of the Demon Lord's name. What if the Demon Lord is Soma?
Oh.
From an alternate dimension.
Oh, my.
Because think about how effective the Demon Lord has been in taking things over.
Well, I did at least think it could be another summoned person, but that would be a great idea. I don't know how it would work.
How about this for an idea? Yeah. The Demon King is Soma from that alternate dimension, and he's like, come back here for vengeance, and Lysia's with him.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying, is that it is the alternate Soma who's got all this anger and bitterness against this world, and is basically like, me and my wife are coming back, and we're going to take it all.
Yeah, but read volume 6.
Oh.
Yeah, I know, okay. But that would be like... like, I don't get, like, even after Volume 6, I still don't know why he recognizes that name. Like, maybe it's a name of someone he knows, or maybe a name or a nickname he had, or a name of someone, because we don't know much about, like, Soma's life. Like, the thing we know about it is that his grandfather died, he was going to be a civil engineer, and then he was, like, whisked off to Alpha to run the kingdom.
Well, I'm curious if there was something in between when he left his world and when he was... summoned the first time we see him here, because we don't really see the summoning ritual, and you know, I don't really know how that went, and I don't know if maybe he was semi-conscious before then, whatever happened in the meantime. So actually, I don't know.
Speaking of that, like, there's quite a few hints that this world has a connection to where Soma comes from, because Soma doesn't speak the language, but they can understand him because he's speaking in Japanese. And he even mentions that a lot. It's just like, I can't read your guys' language, but you can understand me. I'm speaking Japanese, and you guys can understand me. And he can understand them. He just can't read the language. And there's even, like, I think it's in Volume 4 or 5, where he finds this island nation that makes katanas. And he's like, you know, this is very similar to my world. And he's kind of thinking of, like, you know, is this world connected to my world in some way? Or... other heroes.
Yeah, it's volume. Yeah, yeah. Volume 4. He has the katana from the Dragon Archipelago. Yeah.
Yeah, but what Bayou is talking about is in volume 5.
Yep.
Like this island is introduced in volume 4, but I think it's further mentioned in volume 5 a little bit more in detail.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, it could be. Like I said, I've only read up to 4 so far, but I definitely want to read the other ones. Like, I want to keep up with this series. It's, you know, I find it's well written. Like, I find it engaging to read. I find it's, you know, that even when it's espousing more political ideas and stuff, it's not like it feels like I'm reading a textbook. Like, it's still
interesting. It's almost like a textbook to me. Like, some of the history books I've read. Yeah. Like, oh, Soma did this, then he did this, in 1964 he did this, and then a couple of years later he did this, you know? It kind of feels like that to me. And, like, I have a my crazy theory about, like, realist here in the world is they're going to pull something like they did with Utawari Watamo, if anyone's seen that.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah, if anyone has seen that, like...
I have not.
I'm not going to spoil it, but basically, like, with, my idea is what's happening is that's basically like the Utawari Watamo situation.
So I'm going to take a wild stab and say, like, basically it's going to end up being that this world that he's in right now is actually his own world, but the past?
From the future.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Because basically, like, with Utawari Watamo, and just close your ears if you don't want spoilers, like, you find out that this whole, like, feudal society is in the future, because of this, like, post-apocalyptic event that wiped out, like, most of humanity. And the animal creatures you see around are basically genetic mutants created by humanity. And now they're in, like, the feudal era. Like, my theory
What are you talking about?
Utawari Watamo.
Utawari.
Okay, because I misheard how you pronounced it, so... And then you started explaining that, oh, that sounds familiar, but okay, we're talking about the same thing. Okay, good.
That would be like, I mean, there's been other fantasy series that have done that. So, I mean, it wouldn't be totally outside of possibility.
And they talked about how the demons and the, you know, the creatures, the human creatures in their world look similar. So that's kind of a similar idea, I think, to Utawari Watamo. Where, like, there's these different races, but they might all be interlinked in one. It was kind of the revelation that the demons and the humankind are the same in this series.
Like, how about this for a thing? Like, say, for example, Soma's world, they discover magic, and then they have this, like, society where, like, magic and technology is combined together. And basically what happened is, like, you know, the society goes to shit, and it turns into, like, a post-apocalyptic stuff. And what we're seeing is, like centuries into the future, like, will this magic and mutant stuff have, like, calmed down, and there's, like, this development of a society, and because it's been so long, people have forgotten, because, you know, it's just like, you know, because it's the same thing what happens when all technology goes, like, gets destroyed, you know, we're just going to go back to the Stone Ages, and then eventually we'll get back up to that level again.
It would be a very interesting way to take the series. I don't know if it will, but it would definitely be interesting.
Yep.
I still have to think, like, I'm just curious about how the whole demon realm thing is going to play into it. Because they said, like, if I recall, they just say, like, basically the demon realm just appeared one day. It wasn't like it had always been there. It just kind of appeared and they attacked. Isn't that right?
Yeah, it's like some sort of portal that, like, spawned and, like, to some area and just, like, fucking demons and stuff just came spewing out of it.
Yeah, yeah. It was like Oblivion and Elder Scrolls.
Does Soma have to, like, sacrifice himself to turn into, like, a giant dragon to fight the diabolic prince of destruction or some shit?
Well, I mean, I'd still be okay if that's how the series ended too. I mean, you know.
Does that mean that Soma is Dova King? He is dragonborn.
No, that was Skyrim, dude. Totally.
No, the emperors were dragonborn. The emperors had dragon blood in them as well.
Yes, I know.
They didn't learn the shout. I'm just imagining Soma, like, saying, like, Fusradar or Sir. Like, he's, like, the Nordic speaking in the dragon tongue.
Let's hope not. I mean, this thing has, like, we already have enough Norse isekais. We don't need more. All right. So, now, do you guys have anything else that you want to say or talk about? Because we're already at, like, the 2-hour mark.
Yeah, but one last thing that I think it's very important to mention, like, and you kind of approach the subject a little bit in the last few minutes when you talked about how the book was written. And Well, for me, it was the fact that this book is written like sometime in the third person, sometime in first person, and not always from the same character's perspective. Like, especially in the first one, it kind of dies down a little bit in the later volumes. But in the first one, you have a lot of, like, Soma is speaking in the first person. Then you have, you change, like, section, and it's Licia who's in the first person. So you see her perspective. And then you get to a third person that you don't know who's speaking that is in the first person. And you only learn of who's speaking at the end of that section. And you also have a few other characters in the first book that are like this. So that whole mechanic, I found it really interesting.
A last thing I want to say is that I hope we see Soma in like in a Pinochet outfit chucking people off dragons.
Okay.
Free dragon rights.
Well, we know there are dragons, so I mean, you know.
Yeah, well, I want to see him, and like, possible. I want to see him wearing a Pinochet costume and giving people free dragon rides so I can chuck them off dragons.
Okay. Do you have anything else to say?
This series is lit, and give me Pinochet Soma.
Okay.
Terrence. I'm all set.
Terrence is like, that's it, I'm done, I can't even. All right, so we will cease our conversation there, and, you know, why not? Like I said, we've already been at it for 2 hours. So, needless to say, we have lots of good opinions of this series, and I think we're all kind of hopeful that it continues to be good and gets maybe even better from where it is. Like, I guess volume 7 is coming in September. So, and then that catches us up with Japan. So I don't know when volume 8 is going to come out in Japan, but we'll see. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me tonight. And as always, we have completely neglected picking a topic for our next podcast. But again, I'll mention that on a video or on Twitter and wherever else I can manage.
We'll just pick something out of a hat, and we'll rock paper scissors for who wants to do it, because there's some series I don't want to talk about and some I definitely want to talk about, like Realist Hero.
Yeah, there you go. All right, so, and to you, the audience, thank you very much, especially if you've listened to this entire video, this entire thing, because, like I said, it's a long one tonight. Not that we ever do short ones, but it's a little longer than even average.
You have to make it worth their Patreon money. Unless you want to give them, like, the bloopers, and then they, like, stop.
All right, so we will be back in about 2 weeks. And I don't think we've ever kept exactly 2 weeks, but roughly 2 weeks. And we'll let you know what we're going to talk about on social media out there. And thank you very much for listening. Until next time, bye-bye for now.
See ya.
Dun, 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 dun.
For show notes and related links, visit lightnovelpodcast.com.